Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today I'm really, really happy to welcome back my friend, producer, screenwriter, and now author, Stephen L. Sear. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Sherry. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've got up pretty early today. I'm only laughing because now I'm going to go through my entire day diary so that I can try to keep people entertained. I woke up. I brushed my teeth. I took the dog out. No, actually, things have been going very well here. I've been very, very busy. A lot of cluttered things going on, but a lot of progress in certain areas. So it's a good start to the new year. And by the way, Happy New Year to everybody out there.
And thank you on my part. Happy New Year to you, too. And give your little puppy, Julian, a hug and a kiss from me.
Julian is lying on my lap, as usual. That's part of the morning ritual after I feed him. And then I come into the office and sit down. He comes in and looks up at me like, okay, you're going to put me on your lap, which I do. So at the moment, he's draped across me.
Aww. I love
your
puppy.
He's my little muse.
He must be heavy, though, because he's a big boy.
He's, yes, as other people have heard me mention, he's a Cavalier King Charles, which the standard weight for those are around 13 to 15 pounds. He's about 35 pounds at this point.
Oh,
and he's not he doesn't need to hit the treadmill. It's not like he's got a lot of fat on him. He's just a large version of his breed. But unfortunately, or fortunately, Cavaliers were bred to be lap dogs, so he still has that breeding. So in his mind, he's this little tiny thing, but no, he's, when I say he's draped across me, he is literally draped across me.
You are stuck in that chair.
Yeah, actually, pretty much. My arm right now, he rolls back and forth depending on when my arm goes to sleep.
Aww. Well, the first thing I think we should tackle is talking about something everybody's talking about is the Xena reboot. You want to tell everybody what you know?
A reboot? Really?
Yeah.
When did that come about? Huh. Well, this will be kind of a short conversation. Yeah, so as everybody is now aware, there is apparently a reboot in the process. And this is something that has been talked about for the last 15 years, about whether or not there's going to be a Xena movie or there's going to be another Xena TV series. And there are a lot of reasons why it just got, bounced back and forth. And I am not the authority on those main reasons. Rob Tappert is the one who absolutely knows everything about this. And Rob has been, I think, actually very good in trying to keep the fans aware of what's going on. Lucy has done that as well. And it's gone back and forth. Sometimes there's little glimmers of light. Sometimes it's complete darkness. So I've always said that eventually something was going to be done. The Xena brand is just too popular. It's a part of our pop culture right now. There's no way the studios are going to ignore that. But how is it going to be done? What manner is it going to be done? Is it going to be done in a manner that is true to the original series, or is it going to be in a manner that is trying to capitalize on the name in order to cast the broadest net among the audience? And that has to be accepted that is what happens quite often. The studios, they're businesses. They need to make money off of these things. They're very proud of their projects. Hopefully they are. But the bottom line is that they can't continue to make things that lose money. So, the best we could hope for was a combination of the two. There have been some TV shows that have been turned into movies where they did a really good job. Others that were just absolutely horrible. I will say this, though, there's absolutely no way any reboot or movie can please all the fans for a number of reasons. When we were on the air, we couldn't please all the fans. And with the prism of of history, we all look back on the show, and certain things through that prism become highlighted for us, and other things become darkened. So when I listen to people discussing what Xena is and what it should be, you begin to realize we all have a specific way we look at the show. And some people have talked about the changing times and how we're freer to do certain things and tackle certain stories. And I try to point out, I say, yeah, that's great. However, that's still different from the original series. So because of the restraints we had back then. So I'd heard about a lot of these movies and reboots, and people would ask me, and I would just tell them what I know. I've never misled anybody about those things. I just told them what I know. So when the first round of discussions came up about it being possible that it was mentioned in the trades, there was nothing that was in the trade that I hadn't heard before. MCA and NBC has always been looking for some way to exploit the property, and I figured, oh, probably a confluence of conversations got reported and that's been magnified. And then it came out, of course, that, yes, they actually were doing that, and they were looking for a writer. And by the way, thank you, everybody who's been supportive of me. I really appreciate that. I would obviously love to work on the series. When they finally did announce Javier as being the writer on it, I, just like everybody else, was curious and checked him out. I got to tell you, I think without knowing what's going to happen and without really having any more information than anybody else, I think that we lucked out here. I don't know the man, by the way. I've never met him. He's got a good, solid background. He certainly seems to be fan-friendly. He was a fan of the show. So I'm optimistic. I think it might be... it's certainly going to be fun. So we'll see.
He's very talented from what I read.
He's very talented. He's, as I said, he's got a lot of really nice credits. And he seems to be a nice guy. So, but just officially for everybody, I really don't have any more information than that. I am not in the loop. At this point, obviously, I would love to participate in some way, but everybody who worked on the show would say the same thing. We had such a love fest for the show. But at the very least, I'm kind of anxious to see how they pull it off.
Yeah.
So it gets my thumbs up, if anybody's asking.
Okay.
Yeah, and by the way, and everybody should keep in mind, everybody should keep in mind that it's not just Javier. You've got Rob and you've got Sam involved, and... Rob sometimes takes a lot of grief for the things about the show, but let's not forget that the show existed because of Rob and Sam and our big brother Hercules. So, I'm optimistic. I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen with it.
Yeah, I think everybody's curious. I mean, it's such a difficult thing because, like you said, everybody has their own love fest for the show, their own parts of it that they adore. Like, and you can't please everybody. You can't. You never can. I mean, I'm not at the level you are, but I'm a novelist, and I know because I get good and bad reviews, not everybody loves what you do. It's just the way life is.
Yeah. I mean, you're dealing with millions and millions of people. There are going to be naysayers among them. As long as you're not trying to go out and insult people, you're just doing the best that you can. Now, I know the main controversy right now, of course, is about Lucy and Renee being on the series.
Yeah.
And that would take probably a few hours to discuss that and the way the business interacts with the audiences and what they perceive as being and so on. As I had said many times before, at a certain point, it would be difficult for now, by the way, this is not Steve speaking. This is from the studio business mindset. Difficult to bring back the actresses in the main role because of what they're trying to accomplish. Now, I don't necessarily agree with all the reasoning behind that, but I understand it. It's kind of like I accept it because I accept it as being the system because it is the system. So, and by the way, you also have to... keep in mind that what Lucy and Renee's opinions are and as far as whether they want to or not or how they want to participate. But that's the big controversy right now. I think I think most people who most people will at least give it a shot. I'm hoping they will. And if you don't like it after the first few episodes, then fine. But I would love to see, well, I'd love to see Lucy and Renee in almost anything, to be honest. yeah, who knows? We'll see.
Don't get started on women in film and TV because it gets
the diversity thing. That is, there's no simple answer to that, and I certainly am very long-winded and can talk quite a while on that. It's a self-feeding system in that regard. It's extremely complex, and everybody who complains about it and everybody who ignores it has to start looking at themselves. Everybody, because it doesn't. It's like when I was a child. I remember being in the car with my parents and my brother, and we were driving somewhere. We were in traffic, and I'm just a little kid, and I really don't know much about the world. And we're driving along, and I'm hanging over the front seat as I used to do before they realized that seatbelts actually had a purpose. And I'm just looking at all this traffic, and it's just going off in the distance. And so I asked a question, which totally stumped my parents. I said, who's in front of all this? There's no way to answer that. It's just traffic.
Yeah.
Now, that actually kind of lends itself to what the situation is, because the real ultimate problem here is a combination of profits and perception. You have money makers, people who are making money off of movies, but they want movies and TV to be the top hits, so they look at what has been the top hits. And to them, the top hits have been relatively diversity light, I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not willing all the time to actually do a full push to test that theory out. So you get little hits here and little hits there and little hits here, and people point to them. But, the Hollywood industry is actually not as progressive as people think. It's actually very, very cautious because it has to make the money. Now, the problem is that we've actually convinced society that that's what it should be. So now society has bought into it, so society now buys the movies. See, it's just a circle that goes on. And back in the back when I started into the business, and obviously before then, it was worse. Now, it's gotten better, but that's only an incremental complement to it. It hasn't gotten there yet. Back then, when I was trying to write characters, and, boy, this is hard to, because when you talk about issues of diversity, racial and gender issues, you always sound like you're taking a position. I'm just explaining where I was at the time. I was writing characters based on my life, and my life being on military bases, you met everybody. It was a huge diversity. You had gender issues because basically men were the fighters and women stayed at home on a base. Thankfully, that's all changed. But as far as races were concerned, you did not pick and choose who you lived next to. You were assigned places. Your units were assigned to you. So it wasn't that much of an issue for me. So when I would find myself writing characters, I always write from how a character feels to me, and I picture them in my mind. And sometimes I picture them as white, sometimes black, sometimes yellow, sometimes red. I can't explain where those images come from, but they aren't based on the popular stereotypes. They're based on my experiences. And I remember writing an episode where this family was looking for their child. And it was a nice, I put them in as a nice upper middle class family, and they're just looking for their teenage son who's disappeared. And I casually mentioned they were African American, the family.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got a network note, this is in the 80s, telling me that I can't write them as black because blacks are villains.
What?
Now, that
Whoa.
Was in 1980. Keep in mind what it was like in the 70s and 80s when it was all portrayed as street pimps. And I really stared at that note trying to figure out, but that's not who I wrote, and that's not the people I know. But what they were trying to tell me, well, it's this one executive, thankfully it was just one, was it's harder for us to sell that, because when somebody sees them, now once again, them talking about the public, their interpretation of the public, the moment they see someone like that, they're going to start thinking about the movies they've seen with the pimps in the streets. So who's at the front of that traffic jam? It just goes back and forth and back and forth. Now, we've come a long way with that, thankfully. But we are not there yet. And even in my own writing, I chide myself when I describe a character and a part of me starts saying, oh, you need to do this because of, you know, some sort of outside pressure. You need to specify this character is, because every time I specify a character is African-American, I then want to specify a character is Caucasian-American and a character is Asian-American. The truth is I'm writing my characters. I know what they feel like. When I get down to casting, I want to go for the best possible person. And by the way, that was one of the cool things about Xena. You know, when we were casting people in that, it was kind of like whoever was the best. I mean, you know, people remember Marcus. When Marcus came in, we had a black lover for Xena, and truly we got through the casting with all these different people, and it really didn't hit us that that's what we had done. We were like, this guy's awesome. We want him to play this role.
And he was gorgeous.
Oh, God. And, yeah, believe me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we could.
I mean, he was a beautiful man.
We had fun casting sessions. We had fun casting sessions back then. Yeah, it was a good time. We it's probably an entire book of casting sessions that you know, Beth Heimson would bring in people for us, and how we would sit there and we would talk about the well, you know, somebody walks in and gives an audition and they walk out, we have to discuss exactly what the character was like and how this particular person brought things to it. But the memorable ones, like Bobby Hosea, who played Marcus, and obviously Hudson Like, those stand out in your mind because you see them when they come in and they're special. Tim Amundsen, who's in Gallivant right now, I remember his casting session. It was very funny because we were casting him for Eli. But, yeah, you just know it when they walk in the room. But it's like, gosh, you're really cutting yourself out if you start restricting yourselves because of what the outside world, their expectations. I've always loved to play against the expectations. I think that's much more interesting.
And fun.
But, and unfortunately, the gender issue is harder to solve than the racial issue. You would think it would be the opposite. And that's one that one is the most frustrating one to deal with. I've done so many panels on...
Don't you find it sort of sad that women themselves are part of the problem?
Yes, you became a little blurry there. I'm not sure what happened to your phone, although I did hear what you said. I did a panel like last year, which is, I guess, since we're only like 20-something days into this year, that's easy to say. It was a panel that I was on where we were discussing the gender issues. And I've done a lot of these panels. And believe it or not, when I was first asked to do panels on girl power, as they called it, and I hate that title, I had to point out that there were no women on the panel. Believe it or not, that's true. That's how they were starting off these panels. Yeah. So, but somebody brought that issue up in one of the panels about, aren't women complicit in this as well? And it was part of a larger discussion about men writing women and women writing men. And for me, it was kind of the same answer. I said, you know, there's a double-edged sword here because men writing women is not as convincing as women writing men. And, of course, a lot of people, mostly men, kind of objected to that. Now, a good writer, hopefully, can write both, because a good writer understands his or her flaws, and we'll look at those places where we are missing it. But what I was trying to point out, though, is that men have existed in a male-dominated society. So we've gotten really used to dictating what it is we see women as. So when we write, we tend to write what we have convinced ourselves is correct. Women, when they write men better in relation to how we write women, when men write women, because women have had to live in that world. The goldfish bowl that they live in is the male-dominated world. So they actually have a better understanding of, because we kind of force that on them. And I know a lot of people out there right now rolling their eyes and going, oh, I don't agree with that. Once again, I'm not trying to take sides in it. I'm just trying to point out something that to me is fairly obvious. So it's the same thing, though, when these other decisions are made. We have created a goldfish bowl where that gender difference is accepted, even on such small basic levels. And I think we really have to start questioning that, but not in an angry way. We need to just kind of start looking at ourselves and saying, that's an interesting choice I made. Was it really my choice, or was it an expected choice? In my writing, I try to do that all the time, but I get complimented on my female characters, but I'm not a woman. How many times do I have to point that out? I do it on every one of these panels. I say, hey, why chromosome up here? And that's actually what I think the strength of my writing in that regard is that I know that I'm not. So I'm constantly analyzing what I'm doing, and I'm checking with other people. I will talk to authorities on the subject, like women, and I ask for the smallest details. So, boy, I said it was a complex issue, and I wasn't going to get into it. So I just got into it. But,
you really did. That's okay.
I did. It's a very frustrating thing. I was raised on the merit thing. It's like people are who they are, and celebrate the differences you have with them. Celebrate the wonderfulness that we all are. But it's up to our own individuals to look at ourselves and fix those things that are the little dark nuggets that we have inside of us. But anyway, so yeah, we went off into philosophy.
Well, I think that one of the things that is like that is because people watch reality TV and they watch these women that are intelligent women fighting with each other and think that's supposed to be the norm. And that I find, I've never been in that, I mean, I've had arguments with people, but that vicious thing you see on television with the reality shows, that's not been part of my life. And so when I watch it, I'm just like, it's hardly reality. But to them, it is reality. I mean, this is what kids are being brought up with, and I think that's part of the thing that they're... And the other part is that women between 40 and 70 kind of disappear from TV and movies because, not completely, but they're not cast. And I think that's another issue. It's like you said, it's an unsolvable problem.
It's not unsolvable. It's just a difficult problem to solve. It's, you know, it's turning a super tanker with a tugboat. Okay, you can do it, but it just takes a while. Yeah, there's. Well, first of all, reality shows, as we know, are not reality. They're not. Reality shows are comfort food, and I'm not talking down to them. They're very successful, but they give the audience what they want. All shows tend to do that to a certain point because that's how they get their ratings. But a reality show highlights the things that we want to see. You know, there's the old thing about you slow down to watch a train wreck. You know, driving on the freeway and there's a train wreck, it's not just slowing down for safety, it's a train wreck. It's over there on the rails, but we will slow down and we will look. You don't slow down to watch two people hug. We accept that behavior. That's supposed to be kind of normal. So I can't sell that, but I can sell the arguments. I want to see people debasing themselves, not me personally. I'm speaking as an advertiser,
right.
Because people will tune into that.
Sad. Your whole time, I wanted to have more time to talk about your book. We got so into that, the other issue. You have two books. One is your book about film, and the other one is Villani. When's Villani coming out?
You know, Sherry, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm having a hard time hearing you.
I'm sorry. When is Villani coming out?
There we go. Villani?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were asking about? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, good question. Villani. So let me do a lead up to it. Villani is the first volume of a three-volume set, a novel series, created by me, and excuse me, I just watched The Muppets last night, so I'm into my moi picky mode. Peter J. Wax and myself created this, and Peter J. Wax is an amazing author who I was very fortunate to have run into a couple of years ago at Denver Comic Con, and we just really hit it off. He had this kind of notion for a character. And he brought it up to me, and we suddenly started bouncing back the creative ideas and how, you know, this character could move forward and stuff like that. And out of it, we decided to write this short novella about this character. In further creative discussions, it ended up being a three-volume set, plus a world that we created that has encouraged anthologies. There's already been a short story that's been published in this particular universe. And it's just got incredible life. We've planned a couple of books, anthology books, plus a graphic novel. We're going to move forward with all of that. But it all starts with the first volume being published. And Villainy is it exists in a world where basically certain people have developed powers. Now, instead of doing it as it's popularly done, where people have powers and they become heroes and whatever, we kind of looked at it from, well, what would actually happen if that actually happened? If some strange reason some people develop powers, other people didn't. And we realized that, well, two things would happen. First of all, they would become immediately popular, especially if they were heroes. And anything that's immediately popular is going to get sponsorships and corporate interests. And once that starts happening, then the government's going to get involved, and there's going to be regulations, and there's going to be control over when they can do certain things, and so on and so on. We kind of built it up from that. So in this particular world, we have corporate-sponsored heroes, and we have villains who also have powers, but the corporate-sponsored heroes, it's like the World Wrestling or like NASCAR. They have huge fans from all the normal people. You know, the normal people hate the idea of supers because supers have powers and they don't. But they love them because they bet on their favorite heroes, and you know, some of them bet on the villains. And there's also a huge super fund of insurance to take care of damages that happen because the superheroes, of course, they're branded. They have to, you know, during a fight, they might mention their particular brand of Zeppi Cola or whatever. So there's this whole world where this actually exists. But our book actually doesn't center around those superheroes. Our center is around this one strange hero that shows up. Nobody knows who he is, and he basically starts taking down the supers. And people can't figure it out. The sponsors want to know who he is, the government wants to know who he is, and the superheroes and villains want to know which side he's chosen, but they can't figure this out. And the truth of the matter is that he is not even a he. He is a she. And she is just a college student. She has no powers whatsoever. But she's filled with this frustration and anger over her life that is now starting to spill out because she's coming to a point in her life where she has to make decisions. She's questioning everything from her identity as a person to her choices in life to who she's attracted to. It's all coming to a head, and there's a little bit of darkness inside of her that speaks to her. And it all breaks at once. And the story is basically about this one normal person trying to bring down this huge system. It is also extremely complex. That's why it's three volumes.
We don't have a lot of time. Do we have any idea of the date it's coming out?
No, unfortunately, it'll be out this year. We have Wordfire Press is sponsoring it on the early release. If we want to do that, we have four other publishers that are vying for it, and we already have some interest in the film and television area. So we're out there pushing it. And boy, did I just chat this entire time?
Yeah, that's okay. Well, we love you for that.
Oh my goodness, I'm sorry. I took up all the time talking about me.
That's what you're supposed to. You're the guest. are you going to be at any conventions that are coming up, or are you going to be any place that you can run into any of the fans?
Well, I generally show up at many of the conventions, like Long Beach Comic Con. I'll probably stop by in there and say hi to people. I'm not scheduled to appear at any. I actually can do that, like through Wordfire Press. They've offered to place me at cons around the country. But I've just been so busy working on this stuff that I've kind of like not paid attention to that. But hopefully I will open that up and start, you know, announcing some dates that I'll be appearing around the country. If anybody wants to say hi. I'm very open to saying hi to everybody.
Unfortunately, the show is over. Thank you, as always, for coming on. You know, I love, love, love talking to you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for supporting me, too.
Sure, absolutely. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.